Shabbat shalom. In college, I read a book about how to help with writer's block. The book suggested an exercise in which I was supposed to get in contact with what the author called my inner critic. I was to visualize and draw my inner critic as if it was a separate being that was blocking me. What did my inner critic look like? I imagined a spiky demon potato. As I drew my inner critic, I added thought bubbles coming out of its mouth that said, "Who cares? This is so obvious. Everyone already knows this. Boring." This was always what my inner critic said. It still is. And what was so profound about this exercise was how it immediately got to the heart of what can block us, and that is shame. It was the fear of feeling obtuse, diminished, and belittled that was holding me back. Similar fears can hold all of us back. Shame has more power in our lives than many of us realize. Often we are so busy trying to not feel shame that we are unaware when it is controlling our behavior. Do you ever find yourself avoiding certain interactions because you are worried about what someone might think of you? Do you ever stop yourself from going somewhere because you don't feel like you're wearing the right clothing? Think about the times when you were dating or we're on a job interview. Why are we so anxious in those situations? Because there is an innate worry that we won't measure up and we'll feel ashamed. Recently, a friend told me about going on a job interview in which she found the interviewer staring at her shoes. It made her feel self-conscious to the point of distraction. She was certain that her shoes were dirty or just wrong. How could she have worn those shoes? How didn't she notice they were a problem? It speaks to her sense of judgment and would surely impact her ability to get the job. Right before she left, the interviewer shook her hand and said, "I've been admiring your shoes. Where did you get them?" Just like my spiky demon potato, her shoes were the physical evidence of her internal shame or anxiety about not being good enough. Sociologist and best-selling author Brené Brown teaches that shame gives us two primary messages: never good enough and who do you think you are? She calls shame the swamp of the soul. This is an apt description. Shame brings us into a messy place that we can get really mired down in. We read in the Talmud, when one publicly shames a neighbor, it is as though that person shed blood. One who whitens a friend's face in public has no share in the world to come. Clearly, we learn from this that shaming another is a terrible act in the eyes of Judaism. After all, when we shame people, we lower their dignity, confidence, and self-worth. We devalue their humanity. Being consistently shamed can lead to many problems for people throughout their lifetime, such as disengagement from community and relationships, and even a diminished zeal for life. Judaism teaches us to go out of our way to avoid shaming another. But our sages recognize that we all have the capacity to put others to shame and gave us a lesson about this as well. The Talmud records, Rabbi Judah Hanasi was delivering a lecture and he noticed a distracting smell of garlic. He said, "Whoever ate that garlic should leave the room." When the students saw that one of their fellow students start to get up, they all rose and left with him so that he would not be shamed. I love this narrative because it gives us a very typical way that shame can arise and how we can resist it. Shame can come from even those who we hold dear and respect. In this example, the great Judah Hanasi, who tradition deems as the final editor of the Mishnah. And yet he was so involved with his own ego in the moment of giving his lecture that he thoughtlessly shamed the student who smelled of garlic. The other students immediately understood and refused to allow their colleague to be alone in vulnerability and in shame. But instead, they joined him. We can learn a lot from this story. But most importantly, we learn that shame thrives in isolation and is diminished through when we know we are not alone. Being vulnerable is uncomfortable, but it's unavoidable. We have no choice but to risk feeling vulnerable in order to grow into our potential. As Brené Brown said, vulnerability is not a weakness. To be vulnerable, to let ourselves be seen, to be honest, is the birthplace of innovation, creativity, and change. When we see shame and understand it as vulnerability, we change the internal conversation. It becomes about being brave and courageous rather than timid and intimidated. It becomes about drawing strength from the knowledge that when we are most open, we are most able to evolve. This wisdom is built into the fabric of our Jewish year. On Yom Kippur, we make ourselves physically vulnerable to undergo a process of renewal. By not attending to some of our physical needs and desires, such as eating, we effectively imitate death, reminding ourselves of our ultimate vulnerability. The Talmud instructs us that after we break the Yom Kippur fast, we are to begin erecting our sukkah that very night. And on Sukkot, once again, the ability to be vulnerable plays a core role. The sukkah itself is a physicalization of vulnerability. We are instructed to eat and sleep in the sukkah, which is fragile, rickety, temporary, and may be blown away at any moment. And yet, Sukkot is called our most joyous festival. It is a statement that in the face of vulnerability, we can find comfort and even solace and joy. In the sukkah, looking at the stars through the many openings in the roof, we feel at once both vulnerable and deeply connected to everything around us. This is symbolic. We need to be vulnerable to connect deeply. The antidote to shame is in this knowledge that we are all connected through the authentic human experience of being vulnerable. And we are strengthened by knowing we are not alone. Shabbat Shalom.